You know, you don't have to be in New York City. You don't have to be in Austin to be in the midst of great culture. People are, it's exciting how creative people can be everywhere. So it's going on around you, and art needs people to help others make sense of it. And that's the great service that we provide when we write about and talk about the arts.
Those are the words of journalist Jan Niffler. Jan is with us today on The Source, Quill and Scrolls podcast, to discuss culture journalism, review writing, and the state of journalism today. I'm your host, Sylvia Club. Welcome to The Source. Thanks for joining us today, Jan.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Let's start by discussing your career in journalism. You have a pretty stacked resume. From your time as a copy editor across the United States to your career writing about music, your experience in radio, and of course, your current endeavor as the director of Mojo Sustainability for Bop Shop Records in New York. How did you discover your passion for music and its connection to journalism?
You know, thanks for asking, Sylvia. It's growing up in Nebraska, I was really fortunate. I think my parents didn't want me to have to do all the farm kid things that they had to do growing up. And so they encouraged me to be a musician. And so I grew up playing violin and French horn and piano. And I just was really fortunate to, you know, be in youth symphony and, you know, go to music camp and meet all kinds of really interesting people that way. Everybody thought I was going to be a music teacher. And I was too lazy to practice, pretty much what it boils down to. So I decided that the journalism might be fun because I like to write. Like we all say that, right? I'm a good writer. Or your parents say you should write. So I was really fortunate that it was something I could do at least as well as I could play violin. And it's really informed me. It's made me a better writer, having the awareness that I learned with.
Take me through your education. Obviously, you stated you played a lot of instruments and you had this passion for writing and you like to write. How did that take you into your education and then your first job?
You know, I started out thinking that I wanted to be a writer. And then when I was in college, like many of us who become copy editors, there was a teacher who said, hey, you might like this copy editing thing. And so I found out that it was much more fun to help other people make their work great than to worry about whether or not my work was great. And so I was really fortunate to work at a newspaper in North Carolina where copy editing was really important. And that was a great place to start. And there was music there too. You know, it was really great to be in North Carolina when there were some really interesting bands going on in the Triangle and to be there and hear that. And then I moved to Kansas and I was a copy editor there too. And again, the music was part of it was just part of the fabric.
The aspect of, or the placement of a copy editor within the newsroom is dwindling now today. What do you think about that?
I think it's too bad. I think we all need support. We all need an editor. We all need somebody else to have our back, to tell us when we've done something boneheaded, when something doesn't make sense, when maybe we've used the wrong word and, oh, that's not the word I meant to use. And when you're editing yourself, it's hard to catch that. And so you need a friend who's going to say, hey, I think you meant to say this, didn't you? That's really what a good copy editor does, is protect you from yourself so you don't make a fool of yourself. And so the your writing and the publication you're writing for look as good as they possibly can. And copy editors make that happen. And one of the really exciting things about editing, you know, it's for those of us who have an aptitude for spelling and grammar and punctuation and syntax and how things go together and the correctness of, is that street a one-way street going south or north? You know, the really granular stuff that many of us copy editors pay attention to. As you do that work over time, you become a better writer because you're forced to tap into your internal thesaurus all the time. You're always going to that part of your brain, and that really makes that writing muscle a lot stronger. I'm surprised at how fortunate I am that I've been able to build on my career as a copy editor And I feel like my vocabulary is much more, what's the word? See, look here, what's the word I want to use? I kind of want to say elastic. I've got so much more flexibility in the words that I use because I've been exposed to finding answers for people over time. It benefits me too.
Right.
So now that I'm writing more than I ever have, it's really rewarding to discover that I'm doing okay as a writer.
I love that you said a copy editor basically acts as a friend to the writer, because often the connotation of an editor is that they are above the writer, and it's really not. It's a give and take relationship. Mm. A writer needs an editor just as much as an editor needs a writer to improve their own craft. And I love that you highlighted that. And even as you continue throughout your career, you're recognizing that copy editing is making you a better writer.
And when I'm judging quill and scroll entries, there are so many. And so I enjoy reading each of them, but the ones that are clearly written and the ones that don't have typos and the ones that use correct punctuation and complete sentences, those are the ones that rise to the top. That's important in our culture to be able to use those tools effectively and to communicate well. So those things that we learn along the way are important to being awesome writers, or at least winning awards once in a while.
And you know, I was, like you said, you judge a lot of entries for Quill and Scroll, especially for the writing photo and multimedia contest. And I was looking through our review entries from last year, and we had over 120 stories submitted to Quill and Scroll, which is just amazing. But what do you look for outside of clear and concise writing in a review or in cultural criticisms that makes a great story?
Don't try to impress me with what you know or what you've been able to look up. So many entries are just full of liner notes. You know, maybe you went to Wikipedia and found out some backstory. No, have courage. Courage is the key to those pieces that have won. Courage is key to great observation. And it takes time. You know, when you're in your teens, courage means different things, right? But if you can have the awareness of what you're writing about and have the courage to say, I think this is, my friends say this is nonsense, but I think this is good. The writer who wrote about Tall Girl.
You know that really, really tall girl that you go to school with?
Which you maybe wanna.
Well, that's me.
Never mind.
16 years old, 6'1" and a half.
Well, how's the weather up there? A lot of people poo-pooed that show, that movie. But the young woman who wrote about it had some really courageous things to say in her review that really set it apart, that set apart her writing and that set apart that review. She made a good case for why she felt like it was a great movie. And I think it took some courage. So many people said they didn't like it, that I think it took a lot of courage for her to say, here's why you need to rethink that.
And for our listeners who aren't aware, Tall Girl was a movie that came out via Netflix in 2018. And as you said, it did receive a lot of bad review, but there are people who felt strongly enough about that movie to make a point of why it was important to our culture and to your watch list, why it needs to be on your watch list. And really throughout all of your comments that you gave to the top three placing articles within the writing photo and multimedia contest for 2020, you cited their courage or their vulnerability. Does this play an aspect into the professional writers that you look at and those types of critics? What makes them good?
You know, I think that showing courage and showing vulnerability make us human and make us more relatable as writers and as artists. And if you're willing to be vulnerable in your writing and have courage, it's going to resonate with readers. People are going to say, wow, I can trust this person. they're like me, or they're like somebody I know, or they're saying something I would say. It's tricky because you don't want to be too familiar, right? You don't want to be too normal. You don't want to be pedestrian, but you also want to be inclusive. And that's the tricky part about writing about the arts is, you know, there's so much, let's face it, there's so much arrogance about the arts. I grew up playing violin in Nebraska, you know? And yet it's our job, frankly, if we're going to write about the arts, it's not to show people what we know. It's to help people understand what they should know.
And you did state at the beginning of our interview that you've been doing more writing than ever now in the past few years. How do you take those tips into your writing, and what do you look for when you write about art? What are you fascinated with in culture that makes you come to the pen and paper?
It's like, if my life ends and I haven't written enough record reviews, I'm going to feel really bad. when I'm motivated, when I hear a record and I think I need to write about this, I need to write a review of this record. It's so good. I need to tell people about it. So two things are going on. One is that this record does things for me that other records don't do. I'm hearing something that, golly, if I can put it into words, I love the challenge, right? The challenge of how do I say that Maria Schneider is this incredible composer that you need to know about? That Maria Schneider wrote this music about Southern Minnesota that everybody in Iowa and Nebraska and Minnesota should be able to relate to in this weird sort of classical jazz way. So again, it comes to courage. When people blur the lines between genres like that, classical and jazz and country, and that's where the challenge is great, where you can say, I think I know a little bit about country music. I think I'll know a little bit about jazz, classical. To help other people make sense of it, to say, here's what I'm hearing. Here's how I felt when I heard this, or here's what I saw. That's okay to say that. It's okay. One of my favorite reviews that I wrote, what was the name of the piece? The Rochester Philharmonic was playing, and I couldn't help it. I wrote about sort of how it made, I really saw the landscape that the composer may or may not have intended when they wrote this piece. And there were people who wrote letters to the editor saying, yeah, I know what you mean. So having the courage to do something simple about something important, to talk about how you feel about a piece or a work of art or a theatrical work or a book. I think, you know, you got to have lots of quivers, right? You don't want to always talk about how you feel, but that's an okay component of reviewing, of looking at the art. It might resonate with someone. What you say about how you feel, somebody else might sense that too, and it might entice them to experience that art. And that's really what we're for, right? My job as a critic is not to tell you what I know about classical and jazz and rock and roll. My job as a critic is to bring people together. You got to be careful. I have a friend who wrote, he was relatively new to town, and he critiqued the recital of a local piano teacher who taught on the university level. First time this guy had come back to play in months. And so this guy who was new to town was critiquing, was reviewing the show. It's terrible. Guy couldn't play. Well, it turns out the gentleman who was playing had a terrible illness. And it was a miracle that he could even come on the stage, let alone play. And my friend had no clue, and he took so much guff for it. I share that with you because it's an example of how you've got to know what you're talking about. And that's where courage comes in too, is to ask people, hey, why, that was a really weird show. What was going on? You know, to go to somebody who's going to know the answer to that and find out, oh, I need to be gentle, frankly, because this person was being courageous. And I need to respect that courage because I, you know, who knows?
You know, obviously courage plays a lot into review writing about any type of art form. But specifically, you're mentioning different critiques that an artist can have of a critic themselves for not being in tune with their music or their art or not being a performer of that art. How would you respond to that criticism? Is it really just coming down to, I am being courageous and I am creating my own opinion about this piece? Or does it come down to, you do have to have experience in that art form?
Do you know the difference between Dave Brubeck's Blue Rondo a la Turk and Take Five?
I cannot say that I do.
The high school jazz band that was playing at the Rochester International Jazz Festival that I wrote about for the paper, let me know that I did not know the difference. I think I said Take Five and they were actually playing Blue Rondo a la Turk. I felt so dumb. But yeah, I couldn't right now. I couldn't, if one of them came on, I think I would say Take Five. That's just the way Dave Brubeck is, right? Know your stuff. And that's why it's so important. You know, so many of the reviews that I read were of the same movie. Many, many people who entered their work into the contest this year wrote about, like, there were like three main movies that high school students were really excited about in 2019, 2020. And they read the same, you know, people made the same observations. If somebody said something awesome about one of these movies, it would have elevated it to the top. It's hard to write about popular culture. It looks easy, but the people I know who've been on newspaper staffs who try to write about popular culture, they don't do a very good job of it because it's hard. It's hard to write about something that everybody likes, right?
It's a question of how do you make yourself stand out in your opinion or your critique, or even if you're not standing out, like you said, what elevates your review or your critique to the top of the tier? And you know, you mentioned your own critique of a Rochester High School performance. And obviously, all students that are entering Quillen's World Contests are high school students. And writing about something that another person puts work into, whether it be sports, whether it be art, whether it be even a debate, is hard and it's a sensitive topic. So how should high school students approach writing about their peers' work, keeping in mind that their peers have put all this effort into a performance?
There was a opera tenor named Pavarotti. Who came to, you know, world famous guy. Came to Rochester, played on April Fool's Day, coincidentally. And I hadn't written about music in a long time. And we were between classical critics at the paper. And Pavarotti was such a big deal, you kind of couldn't let him go unremarked upon. And they're like, Jan, do you wanna go down and go to the arena and do the Pavarotti review? I'm like, well, sure. And Pavarotti was at the end of his career and he sang fairly poorly that evening. And I grew up with my mom telling me that. And so to get that in a letter from a reader, like, really kind of startled me. And so what do you do with, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all? You know, in one way, we have to live together, right? If you're writing for somebody that you're going to see down the hall or in the parking lot or at a sporting event, do you treat them differently than if they were strangers and you were never going to see them again? How much slack do we cut ourselves, right? With how much grace do we treat each other? And I think I can't imagine anything more difficult than to be a high school student writing about a high school performance, right? So You talk about how it made you feel. And you talk about the great things. And you talk about the less great things. And you let the bad things go. Because we're all trying. And we're all doing the best we can. And I think that's, you know, to write about high school arts would be a very difficult thing. And I'm glad I don't have to do it.
You know, I think that really calls into the question, something we're faced with as journalists every day, that balance between objectivity and subjectivity. What is one way to one person may be a totally different view to another. And especially within high school writing, like you said, you talk about the good things and you talk about the not so good things, but you have to put into a line where those two cross.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about objectivity and subjectivity, what do you do if it's your friend? What if you do it's your, if it's your boyfriend? What if you, it's your next door neighbor and it's somebody you've known all your life and you really like them? What's fair? Do you give somebody you care about more space, more words, a prettier review? You know, the best rule of thumb is to just be fair. Don't ever let anybody accuse you of using your journalistic platform to benefit you or somebody else.
While we're on the subject of high school journalism and talking about the writing, photo, and multimedia contest, which deadline is in the spring, what professional critics would you recommend that high school students read and try to learn something from?
That's an obscenely difficult question because there are fewer and fewer newspapers in particular that feel like that's an important thing to pay money for, right?
Or is there a publication? I mean, when I think of review writing, I automatically think of Rolling Stone and their basis of music and art.
So we naturally think of Rolling Stone. You know, it's easy to think about Rolling Stone first. I can't help but saying that Alex Ross in The New Yorker is a great challenge to read sometimes and always worth it. I think Alex is a great example of somebody with a lot of courage. The Wall Street Journal, weirdly enough, the Wall Street Journal has great criticism, great cultural writing. It's funny. It's totally not like the rest of their news coverage. It's interesting. It's not too conservative. I would say that I would look around locally and see who you find that you like. Look around, and it's tricky to find the people who are doing it, but look for people who you like to read. And make sure, I think the key is to read as much as you can anyway. The more you read, the better your brain's going to function, right? And the more you can fill your quiver with words. And I think reading anything, as long as you're reading, for as simple as that sounds, makes a huge difference.
There's something about your career that's so nostalgic. Your work as a copy editor, and you also run a record store in an era when vinyl is considered the new old fad. I was first being introduced to music at the end of the CD reign and remember picking through my parents' collection. But now music is ruled digitally. What's it like selling vinyl?
It's so exciting. What an incredible time we live in. Business is incredible. Vinyl records are just, we are so busy and we've had such a great year. And so while people were sort of quarantined earlier this year, mail order was off the chart. But then when we could open up, we were closed for probably 3-4 months. When we reopened, people just really streamed in. It was, pardon the pun, it was really amazing because I think people want something they can hold on to in these crazy times, to have a record that you can look at and feel and you own it. And it's this thing that is, it represents so much blood, sweat, and tears. It's really, I'm so fortunate to be able to be part of a record store in Rochester, bopshop.com. It's really exciting because there's so many people, young people in particular, who are finding out how much fun it is to have records, how meaningful it is. It's not just not just fun, but really there's a lot of depth to vinyl records.
Our scholars here at Quill and Scroll, and really any high school student who has an interest in art and culture and writing and being courageous in their own opinions and vulnerable, that's something that they can express and show off in our yearbook excellence contest, our writing photo and multimedia contest, and even our news media evaluation. And just for those of our listeners who are wanting to submit to those contests, the yearbook excellence contest deadline is October 17th. What reviews have you written and included in your yearbook that need to be seen? In the writing photo and multimedia contest, of course, as I mentioned earlier, does close in the spring. But keep those in mind, and keep in mind Jan's tips that we talked about today. That's all the time we have for today for this episode of The Source, Quill and Scroll's podcast. Jan, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
I hope we can do it again sometime. Thanks so much.
Until next time, Sylvia Club, signing off.